Children who have been abandoned need help.
Without international adoptions, more and more children are suffering.
You know, the law is so ridiculous.
Terrible. Terrible.
Maribel, Brisa, and Derek were born in Guatemala, raised by foster parents for a year or so, and then adopted by American families in 2007.
I'm getting to be such a big boy.
I love being a mom. I love being a mom.
I was born in Guatemala.
And we think she's amazingly special and brilliant, but she's just a normal kid.
I mean, he's just been the piece that's been missing for us.
I can't believe the blessing that I have had with her, because she's an amazing, amazing child.
Maribel, Brisa, and Derek are a few of the lucky ones. There are millions of children around the world without caregivers, and even at the best of times, adopting a child from another country can be a long and arduous process.
You have to have a psych exam, you have to have a medical exam, you have to have them give them free access to look at your finances.
We thought it would take about 6 months, and it ended up taking 13 months.
So it took about 20 months from the day that I filled out the application form to the day that she came home.
You gotta really wanna do it. It's not a Lackawanna thing. You gotta wanna do it.
It's an expensive process, but it's also taking care of these kids and making sure they get good homes.
I don't think we can imagine our lives without them. I mean, there'd be such a void.
These families were especially fortunate, because they were able to complete the adoption process before Guatemala shut down international adoptions in 2007.
I really had to hold on lightly because I knew that this process could stop, either because of the government closing the doors and she would end up in an orphanage or something, I'm convinced.
Why exactly did Guatemala shut down international adoptions? Let's rewind. Before 2007, thousands of Guatemalan children found homes abroad each year thanks to the work of private adoption agencies and attorneys like Maria, who requested anonymity. Maria has been an adoption lawyer for nearly 20 years.
Oh, I could tell you stories about all of my adopted children.
¿Y cuántas?
Oh, I don't want to say.
Over the years, Maria has helped hundreds of children find homes in countries all around the world.
All of the families that receive children from this office, they are happy and healthy children.
Many Guatemalan children from privately run orphanages have also found homes with families abroad. Madre Inés, a Russian Orthodox nun and a descendant of the founder of the oldest orphanage in Guatemala, has run the Rafael Ayau orphanage for the past 15 years.
We have received over the 15 years about 1,000 children, a little bit more. Of which 400 have, a little bit more, have gone adopted all over the world. But I would say with 95% success. The Josue, he's a very interesting story. Josue was in the orphanage that transferred to us 115 children the same day. And he had been at that orphanage since he was a baby, and he was never given an adoption. That's how good the government adoptions were working before we took over.
Madre Inés took over the Ayau orphanage in 1995, when a desperate Guatemalan government began asking private organizations to take over its failing state-run orphanage system.
When we accepted the orphanage, when we said yes to the government, after a lot of bargaining, and one of the things that we told them is, we'll take over the orphanage, but we don't want your money, because we don't want any strings attached. The government also named us the institution for adoptions of the country, the.
By 2007, Guatemala's private adoption system was doing more international adoptions per capita than any other country in the world.
Hola.
Y empezó a crecer a partir del año 96.
The number of adoptions began growing and growing in 1996 and continued to increase until 2006 or 2007, when there were 5,000 adoptions.
Elizabeth Barthelet is a law scholar at Harvard, a leading expert on adoption, and the adoptive mother of two Peruvian boys.
Enormous poverty in Guatemala, high birth rates in Guatemala, no advice about contraception or availability, and a religious atmosphere in which you're not supposed to use it, and apparently men don't like it, and a lot of reasons that a lot of women were getting pregnant with babies they could not raise. So lots of reasons for poor women to think that their best choice and their child's best choice was to surrender the child for adoption.
As a mother now, and I don't have any biological children, but I can't imagine anything more difficult than giving up a child, making that decision, even when it's for all the right reasons.
Once I went to court to count how many children went through the system, through the legal system of minors abandoned. 10,000 a year. It's horrible.
There are so many kids that never get adopted and end up in orphanages or who knows where, and that convinced me that a one-parent home is better than no-parent home. And it's the best decision I ever made.
Guatemala, in many ways, seemed to me a model international adoption country, which is part of what's ironic, because to many others, they saw it as the target country they should go after because it symbolized all these terrible things.
Who exactly would want to attack a system that was giving several thousand abandoned children a chance for a better life each year? It turns out that the most influential organization that actively works against inter-country adoptions is UNICEF.
UNICEF itself is very careful never to say that it's against international adoption. But if you look at what they say and do, more importantly at what they do, they never support international adoption. And what they consistently do is attack countries that are sending large numbers of kids out. They attack what they like to call adoption abuses.
Entonces se encontró que en muchos casos había un incentivo económico.
We found that in many situations there was a financial incentive to participate in the adoption process. That turned the child into merchandise, which went against the child's rights as a human being.
Yes, there's maybe profit motive, but it makes things happen. And when you shut that out, you shut things down.
It's not about who has more money and what can we buy him. It's more about the love that we can provide to him and that he gives back to us and the family unit that we've created.
In a country with as much crime and corruption as Guatemala, it's hardly surprising that some people were breaking the law.
And we said, okay, yes, there are wrong things going on, but we have a law, so let's apply the law.
We should prosecute the people who are violating the law. It is always against the law to kidnap.
In addition to concerns about trafficking and profiteering, UNICEF emphasizes the importance of heritage rights.
I think it's very important because a child who grows up in his own country keeps his culture, values, and environment.
I think there's a lot of phony romanticism about why these kids might be better off in their country, having to do with heritage. And, you look at anybody who looks at the kids and their real life circumstances in institutions and on the streets, these kids are not enjoying their heritage.
Frontiers don't exist. And when UNICEF uses the excuse that people who are from Guatemala should keep their roots and all that junk, it's a lie. What people need is family. What people need is love.
The Hague Adoption Convention is a set of guidelines intended to protect the rights of children. So on the face of it, it's unsurprising that UNICEF encourages countries to sign on. But however well-intentioned The Hague might be, it's hard to conclude that The Hague has, to this point, benefited the children it was intended to protect.
The Hague has been a negative influence for a variety of reasons. It's used in terms of other countries, poor countries, they're pressured to ratify it. And in the course of ratifying, first of all, some of them just don't have the infrastructure to actually then create the central authority. So they may ratify, but now they can't do what The Hague requires. So all of a sudden, now they can't do international adoption.
Ultimately, in 2007, Guatemala succumbed to pressure from UNICEF and passed an adoption law intended to facilitate adoption of the Hague Convention. At that moment, the fates of thousands of abandoned Guatemalan children changed.
The new law suspended all international adoptions.
And UNICEF was there in Congress. We had even gone to Congress many times and brought children to Congress to stop the law. And for many times we were able to stop that law passing. Because really the law was something that was against the children. It was not in favor of them.
If we shut down international adoption, there's 5,000 kids a year whose lives we are ruining, whose lives could have been wonderful, and we are dooming them by shutting them into this institution. So, to me, that's fundamental evil.
In addition to placing a moratorium on international adoptions, the new law created the National Adoption Council, a central authority that now controls all orphanages and adoptions in Guatemala.
The law now says that anybody that does not belong to this office of the government is forbidden to do adoptions. So all the children have to go through there. And all the parents, so it's centralized adoption. Okay. But it doesn't work at all.
The plan was to promote in-country adoptions, but that plan hasn't worked. Since the high water mark of 5,000 adoptions in 2007, the number of Guatemalan kids that get adopted each year has dropped precipitously.
According to the National Adoption Council, there have been 35 adoptions in the past year.
And now that the state has taken control, Guatemala's once thriving system of privately run orphanages is a thing of the past.
Hogares? Private orphanages? They're almost gone.
No, hay hogares que...
The government shut down some private institutions. In some cases, they had to use force. Other orphanages decided to close on their own because they survived on the money they made from adoptions. So when they didn't have any income anymore, they didn't have any resources to operate. That's why they had to close.
Because the Rafaela Yao orphanage is supported by philanthropy, Madre Ines has managed to keep her orphanage up and running, despite the government's efforts to take control.
So they came with all these prohibitions, so we told them, you know, your law and your contract really is not in favor of the children, so we're not signing any contract with you. Yes, but then what are you going to do now? Because you say you're an orphanage. So I told them, from this moment on, we are a boarding school. Free for poor children.
The 70 children still living at the Rafaela Yao orphanage are the exceptions. Since 2007, abandoned children have been sent to state-run institutions like the Hogar Solidario Virgen de la Esperanza.
We began with about 300 children, and today we have 750.
She was found in a trash can in Quetzaltenango. There were dogs that were eating her. Luckily, they started with the umbilical cord, and they didn't cause major damage, so she's a healthy girl. And they found her and they took her to a hospital, but she's been here since she was 3 days old. Mira qué manita.
Así es bella.
Hola, hola, Viviana.
Terrible, terrible. ¿Qué hacemos con los niños?
It's terrible. What are we doing with the children? There is no budget, and before, the system didn't cost the government a penny.
When kids grow up in institutions, very terrible things happen to them. I mean, there are studies, and increasingly good studies now, of what happens to babies if they grow up in institutions. And very quickly, in the first months and years of life, those are enormously important periods in a human being's life when they're very young in terms of development of the brain, development of emotional capacity.
We will not be able to complain that we have a lot of gangs after. Because once they reach certain age, you can't go back. There's no way. They are too harmed, too wounded.
El gobierno no puede hacerlo todo. Nosotros estamos en total desacuerdo.
The government can't do everything. We completely disagree with the government centralizing all activities because, in the first place, That's not its function.
What you have is people who want to adopt kids who need homes. Private intermediaries, yes, they often get paid to put these two willing parties together, I would say. I mean, if the child's old enough, they're a willing party. If they're an infant, I think it's what they would want if they could choose.
Guatemala's new adoption law also contains regulations that are, quite simply, baffling.
You can't have contact with a child, and you can't have contact with anyone involved in the adoption process. It is prohibited. It's a crime.
¿Por qué?
Burocracia.
If I want to adopt a child, I can't because I work here. Precisely. Why?
Jaime Tecu, who worked with UNICEF to write Guatemala's new adoption law, explains the regulation this way.
Many times a family that already knows a child might not be suited to take care of the child's needs. So a study of the child's needs and the family's qualities must be made. That's why it's important in the adoption process that there is no previous contact between the child and the adopting family. The Hague Convention prohibits it. It's not permitted.
That may make sense to a bureaucrat, but for parents, it's easy to understand how this kind of regulation could lead to very bad outcomes.
We have a child here who he was badly beaten. So he ended at the hospital. And these Guatemalans help him. And they had their child at the same hospital. So they fell in love with the little boy. Finally, the little boy came here to this orphanage. So they finally found him. They went to CNA and they said, we want to adopt him. We know the child. We have been visiting him over all these years. So, but the case was never clear for us to adopt. So now CNA, maybe we can adopt him. Forbidden. Would you believe that?
The situation in Guatemala is not unique. Due to pressure from organizations like UNICEF, international adoptions everywhere are on the decline.
If you look at a chart of international adoption, you can see that for the first six decades, the number of international adoptions, both to this country but also to other countries, went up steadily almost every single year until 2004. From 2004 to 2010, 6 years compared to the previous six decades, the number of international adoptions fell by half.
You know, I've always held UNICEF in high esteem, but in this situation, I'm really sad to say that I think this was the wrong move.
So where do we go from here?
The law needs to be more flexible, and we need to reopen international adoptions. Definitely. As a Guatemalan, I am very proud that there is an adoption law and that our image of being the number one exporter of children has changed. The children have dignity. Guatemalans have dignity. I would like us to look at the positive side of adoptions. The positive side of adoptions is giving a child a family that will care for that child for its entire life.
Anything that any of the governments can do to provide more effectively and lessen the bureaucracy, but keep children safe, I'm all for that. And keep the process legitimate, I'm all for that.
Right.
They need to do it. They need to take it on. And if not, then shame on all of us.
If you have a program going that is taking 45,000 children and magically transforming their lives, taking them out of institutions that will either kill them or destroy their life prospects, putting them into loving, nurturing homes. And it's at no cost to the government because the international adoptive parents pay for it. That's a miraculously successful social program.
One day the government is going to wake up and say how stupid we are. Now we're paying to raise all these children. Before, it was the private people doing it. What are we doing? We could have all those taxes for our pockets. Now we have to spend it on the children. We're crazy. Now let's call all the private people that have good hearts and want to have orphanages. Okay, have the orphanage. We'll give you the children back. That's going to happen. I don't give them two more years.
So there's hope?
Oh, yes. For the children, yes, poor children. Because with the government, there's no hope.